This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We've been talking today in part about Russia's war against Ukraine, the latest phase of which started 2 years ago last weekend. In that time, millions of Ukrainians have been forced to flee their homes. The United Nations has counted more than 30,000 civilian casualties. And Ukrainian President Zelensky has said 31,000 Ukrainian troops have been killed. There's a personal story in the war we're going to come back to for the rest of our program today. We first heard from Marina Teplova in March of 2022 as her daughter and granddaughter were fleeing Ukraine. Since then, we've talked with her two more times. Teplova is a doctoral candidate in English at Illinois State University, but she's originally from the east central Ukrainian city of Dnipro. Her daughter, Maria, whom she calls Masha, and her five-year-old granddaughter left Ukraine early in the war for Poland, then the Netherlands, and eventually made their way to the U.S. We're joined again today by Marina Teplova, and with us for the first time is her daughter, Maria Frantsusova. To both of you, welcome. Thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
So, Maria, I want to begin with you, and I'd like to give you the chance to tell your story. In your own words, we've heard in the past conversations with Marina about the path you took through Poland, then to the Netherlands to get here. When you think back on that journey, what stands out most in your mind?
I mean, honestly, it was a pretty hard time for all of our family. And yeah, like for the last couple of years, I told the story a lot of times about our, you know, very quick trip to Netherlands, because my father said to me, Masha, you should leave the country. It's very dangerous to be here. And so we were traveling in Europe, like by 6 months, we visited Netherlands, Germany, Poland, Luxembourg, Belgium. And then finally, when we prepared our documents, we fly to USA to my mother's house.
What was it like reuniting with your mother?
I can't say. I mean, there was a happy moment that I finally saw my mother. But I mean, like I had a depression first 7 months, I guess. So, I mean, you know, like all this period when I starting new life in USA, there was very far away from everything that I knew in my life before, especially from European lifestyle. So first 7 months, I just was laying in my bed. And, you know, I was not able to do something, to achieve something.
I'm sorry to hear that. Maybe you can tell us just a little bit about what your life was like before the invasion.
I mean, like, I was just, you know, standard normal Ukrainian girl. I had a nice work remotely. I was a customer support representative in a small company. My daughter, she had childcare. You know, like kindergarten kind of for full time. And I mean, I had a lot of friends and my life was happy, I think.
Marina, how was it having your daughter and granddaughter here with you?
Yeah, thank you for this question. You know, it's been such a big excitement, of course, for me and my husband, Howard, to first get prepared for all this, because it took a lot of efforts to bring them here. It took like almost half a year, you know, writing to USCIS and applying. And so when they finally came, it was the culmination, of course. And Aphrodita was very little at the time. She was 3.5. And little by little, you know, she is growing on our eyes. And it's amazing because she shows a lot of progress already now. And Masha has been able to achieve a lot of things since then, even though, yes, at first it was hard. It's difficult, you know, because it's not the kind of visit when you, you know, when you want to visit someone, right? But it's forced in kind of immigration, right, for Maria. That's why it's very important to understand this for millions of refugees in Europe, women with children. It's not something they planned, right? So when you plan it, it's one thing. But when you do it because you have to, it creates like a big context for everything. That's why it takes more time to recover and to get used to the new environment. But our little one, Aphrodita, is very quick with that. She's already, I should say, fluent in English almost. You know, she's very psychologically very open, can easily communicate in English. She switches from English to our language, like Russian, sometimes Ukrainian, because we are from Russian-speaking region in eastern Ukraine. And so the child is amazing. She shows signs of quick recovery. And it's great because I was always worried how she would go over those times when they were crossing borders, sitting on a vacation train with my daughter. And that was so harsh when we thought about this. But for her, no, she rebounded very fast.
Yeah. Maria, we need to take a break in about a minute, but I wonder what you see in your daughter is this. I mean, do you worry she's not as in touch with your culture as you'd like her to be because of this American immersion she's experiencing?
Yeah, but we try to keep something important tradition for us. And especially, like, I spent a lot of time trying to keep learning Russian language. And so, yeah, it's our like everyday routine, I can tell.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break on the program. We will continue this conversation when we return. We're talking with Marina Teplova, who is a doctoral student in English at Illinois State University in Bloomington Normal, originally from the east central Ukrainian city of Dnipro. And she has family, her daughter and granddaughter. Maria Frantsuzova and Aphrodita made it to the U.S. They are refugees from Ukraine. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. You are listening to The 21st Show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are ending our program today with personal stories of Russia's war against Ukraine from people here in Illinois. Marina Teplova is with us. We've spoken with her a number of times since the conflict began 2 years ago. She's originally from the east central Ukrainian city of Dnipro, and she has family who made it here from Ukraine, her 5-year-old granddaughter, Aphrodita, and our other guest on the program today, Marina's daughter, Maria Frantsuzova. You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Maria, one of the things you mentioned before the break is that you had some challenges adapting from an European lifestyle to an American lifestyle. I wonder if you can elaborate on what some of those differences or difficulties were.
Difficulties about what you mean? Sorry, I don't hear it. Can you please repeat
Oh,
the
I'm
question?
sorry. I'm sorry. Yes. I'll say that again. You mentioned when you came here that you at first had difficulties adapting to the differences in lifestyle. I've never lived in Europe myself. I wonder what that experience was like. What are some of the things that you found most challenging or unusual or difficult to adapt to about life in America? I mean, beyond, of course. Yeah, go ahead.
I lost all my friends. I lost my families, and differences between European and American lifestyle, of course, made me, kind of sick. I didn't have a car, and in Europe we have a great public transportation. So, and you can, even if you don't have a car, you are able to go anywhere or walk, And here in USA, Americans usually don't walk on the street. And so I came to live in the very small countryside town named Lexington, like literally among cornfields. So if you don't have a car, you are not able to go anywhere. And of course, for me, with with tendency always to be in the center of interesting, things and events, it was very hard to, just to be stuck in among four walls.
How
I
has
think.
how you go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I think that this just was one of the like one of the main problem, and the second like that I didn't have a friend, and I mean for me at the beginning it was hard to find somebody, who can understand me.
Yeah. I wondered how support from the community has been, both broadly speaking in terms with other people, as well as those who've come here from Ukraine.
In this area where I lived, where I have been living, I didn't find a lot of Ukrainian refugees. So mostly Ukrainians, usually they came to Chicago, I could tell. And here I didn't know nobody, like, no Ukrainian refugees around me. So there was, I mean, I can tell that I had some support from Ukrainian community.
Yeah. Marina, I want to bring up something we've talked about before, and that's you had a cousin who was wounded in combat. His family went to Canada. I understand there's some good news with his story.
Oh, yes, sure. There is a good development in that story, because my cousin has been able to reunite with his family in Canada finally. He received an official document allowing him to leave Ukraine because his injury was serious enough, to, and honestly, he's still recovering. And they are lucky because they have a sponsor in Canada, not just a sponsor, a supporter, a businessman, and like I would say, what is like the best word? It's like, the range of people like Warren Buffett's son, who lives in Decatur, Illinois, who donated $500 billion to Ukraine, right? So my Canadian family now, they are lucky because he even bought a ticket to my cousin, air ticket from Ukraine to Canada, to Toronto, in first class, so that he could be horizontal, because his injury, prevents him from being able to sit for a long time. And so, and since probably last summer, I think 2023, they are living together. They've been, of course, having problems too, sometimes with language, with cultural issues. Yeah, they have two school-age boys and a grown-up daughter who is married, but still, it's like there are a lot of issues. And the sponsor helped them, their supporter helped them obtain cars. He provided them with a place to live, with even jobs, so that was fantastic. This kind of understanding that a family, big family, needs to somehow settle in a new place. So yes, my cousin is now making progress in English, even though he had like pretty good level of English, like low intermediate, but now he still wants to go up because to move forward, because he wants to find a job as a psychologist, as a counselor probably, and to work as in rehabilitation, probably for soldiers, because he knows that very well. He has done it in Ukraine.
You also mentioned having a relative who you felt like you couldn't talk to about this because I think they were in Russia, maybe still. And I wonder if you've had any contact with them and what that sort of family relation has been like.
Yeah, I mentioned that. I know that was especially very poignant that in the first days of the when the war started, it's my second cousin, my Evgeny's actual brother. Yeah, he's in Moscow and we do not maintain contact, unfortunately. We stopped like talking. And it's such a touchy topic that I don't know even, I cannot even ask my cousin whether he speaks with his brother because I know it will be painful for him. It's a very divisive and very deep issue. Because during the first year of the war, first days of the war, when we had conversations, I understood that they are completely covered like with a veil, veil of brainwashing. And everything he wrote to me, I was so shocked at that time that I sort of made the decision, that I cannot talk to him anymore. I cannot find, energy to explain how harsh everything that is going on in Dnipro, in our hometown. How can you, persuade someone that what you hear on the news is not what is going on in reality. So that was a bit too difficult for me. That's why since then we haven't resumed contact, unfortunately. But life is life, and that's how it happens. Not just for our family. We are just one of the many millions, I think, of Ukrainian families who have similar issues with relatives who live in beyond the border in Russia and who have completely different view of reality and view of the world sometimes.
Yeah.
And
And we hear reports here. I mean, there, and some of them are from questionable news outlets, you might say, but about how, Russian speaking citizens were not treated well in that area of Ukraine. I wonder, do you think of yourself as Ukrainian? How do you think of that?
oh yeah, it's interesting. The question of identity is very Very acute, actually. Yes, of course. I've always been thinking of myself as Ukrainian since I came here in 2018 to do my studies in ISU. Yeah, I've always emphasized everywhere that I'm Ukrainian. And even though, like, yeah, Russian, I'm from Soviet Union generation, I speak Russian, right? It's my first language. This is the language that my mother talked to me, and I cannot change that. However much I would, you know. So Ukrainian is my second language, yes. But it doesn't change the fact that I love Ukrainian culture. I've been grown up with it. I've been raised in it. I know Ukrainian songs. When I perform here for people a lot, like piano concerts, like as a volunteer sometimes. So I always include something Ukrainian in my repertoire. I include Ukrainian anthem, Ukrainian folk songs. And I always try to promote Ukrainian culture here by showing our colors, you know, blue and yellow, the colors of our flag. I have a flag flying on our porch so that everyone could see that this is a Ukrainian family. Yeah, because it's important to me.
Maria, how do you feel about that? Do you, your identity as a Ukrainian?
Yeah, as my mother said, it's a complicated question. Also, I have like Asian blood from my father's side, and I can tell that I consider myself like, you know, one third part Ukrainian, one third part Russian, and one third part Asian. And I grew up on Russian literature, especially in their, like, you know, Russian mentality more. I mean, I can tell influence. So yeah, like, I don't know even. And in the same time, I'm completely against to cancel Russian by their nationality. So because I'm sure that there is a lot of Russians who are against the war and who try to support Ukrainian refugees.
Yeah. You know, we've been seeing headlines recently about, you know, Russia making some gains. We heard that earlier in the program from Ian Kelly. He still thinks that the Ukrainians are doing well holding out from a military standpoint. But Marina, I've seen reports of shelling in your hometown of Dnipro, several injuries in the last few days. There was a report from earlier this month talking about a Russian air attack that damaged a power plant. When we talk spoke, I don't know, was it a year ago, a little more, one of the things we talked about was energy problems that your people back there had been experiencing. Well, I wonder what you've been hearing about how people in Dnipro are doing these days.
Yes, since then the situation has improved. This winter was not as harsh as the past winter. Yeah, it's true. Like from what I know from conversations with my father and my mother who are in Dnipro. Yeah, but they occasionally have blackouts, but it became better in sector of energy, if you're speaking about electricity, yeah. But speaking about attacks and drones and explosions, all of those are still here. And unfortunately, there is no relief. I mean, they always have air raid alerts all over the city. It's surprising. I mean, it's shocking to me. I asked my mom. I said, "But do you have air alarm now?" She said, "Yes, it's like it's on, but I don't pay attention." Or sometimes the alarms are at night, and my mom says, "Yeah, I sleep because I don't hear it." So you see, she got used to this harsh sound, and my sister tells me the same. That even though, yeah, they understand that. Explosions might happen anywhere. Nobody knows where, right? Iranian drones and Shahed drones or Russian rockets, bombs, they are flying, you know, we don't know where. And sometimes they try to hit some infrastructure, some big plants, power plants, right? But sometimes they hit residential buildings very often, actually. And recently, yeah, that residential building in Dnipro was hit. Yeah, I think they and the casualties from that explosion are still growing, from what I know. The number is still rising because during the first days they said that two people died. Now they say the number of victims increased. So that's the reality, you know. People are leaving because in 2 years, I mean, you cannot stop living, right? You have to continue doing something, and that's what my sister Katerina tells me every time I talk to her. She says, we cannot just think about it all the time. We just have to continue doing what we have to do, right? Going to work, raising children. Her two children are in Dnipro, my nephew and my niece. So they somehow were able, you know, to adapt to these harsh conditions, to the sound of alarm even, yeah? Because
To the
many
sound of air
refugees,
raids, yeah.
Because many people cannot even endure that. I've heard many stories from refugees in Europe. They say we can't come back because of that. That's so bad on psychic. It affects you on many levels. But
Well, in
it's
the,
possible.
yeah, I was just saying, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I do want to be sure to ask you about, I mean, when we spoke a year ago, there were, you know, people still flying Ukrainian flags. There had been rallies in the first year, and now we're seeing this real turn in support, especially in the Congress, or at least among some in our Congress, about support for Ukraine. And I wonder how you feel about that as you've been watching this play out here.
Well, of course, yeah. I've been keeping in touch with Ukrainian community in Chicago, in Wisconsin, because I have colleagues, Ukrainian colleagues who've been living here. Yes, of course, and most like almost all Ukrainians here in the US, I'm more than sure that everyone understands how important it is for Ukraine to receive the $60 billion supplemental bill, right, for which the Congress, Senate voted for it, and the Congress is still like delaying it. Unfortunately. And that's why, yes, like I've been trying to do my share in on Facebook. Ukrainians were spreading these phones of representatives in different states so that everyone who can call their offices and ask them to vote for this bill, please. Because there are many Ukrainians who are voters in the USA. Yeah. So it's true, like we need the support, absolutely. And if you knew like what else to do. I hope like something else can be done. It's important to be united at this time. And I'm, to me it was very good to feel that I'm part of the community because in Chicago, in Seattle, in DC on February 24, there were huge meetings of Ukrainians and Americans. There were many people who came and who talked about the importance of supporting Ukraine. So yeah, Ukraine needs it, especially now,
All
because this
right.
is a critical moment.
Well, Marina Teplova and Maria Frantzouzova, I want to thank you both so much for being with us and sharing some of your personal stories and experiences with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you so much. That was an interesting experience for us too.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Damian Contreras. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.